Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning and welcome to episode 106 of the Jaguars on SI podcast. My name is Gus Logue, brought to you, joined always. Wow, we were doing so well, John. We were doing so well.
You nailed it.
John, we're here to talk about just off-season topics. Yeah, you start talking.
You nailed the first part of it. Not gonna lie, that kind of got me. Like,
as soon as he gave a fist bump, it jinxed me, and I started malfunctioning.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard for me to get the energy up for these early morning podcasts, and that refilled my tank. And then whatever the hell that was after, yeah, it kind of emptied it right back. Yeah, there we go. But yeah, like you said, off season topics. There's not a lot going on right now. We just had our best week on the Jaguars on SI YouTube channel, over 1,200 views in a week. It helps that we posted, I believe, 4 different things. You can find our shorts from each episode with graphics and everything added in from Dale Phonic on Twitter. You know,
shout out
best content guy there is out there. I can't describe, you know, what a game changer he is, has been, and continues will be. Off-season guests. We said we were going to have like a top 10, and we didn't coordinate it.
Yeah, we can come up with one. Maybe next week.
I got an idea for next week, and
I got 2 good ideas, actually.
Okay. My idea is going to be Jaguar-specific. Are your ideas Jaguar-specific, or are they just
– No, mine is kind of like league at large almost, but like including the Jaguars.
I thought you were going to ask for like – rank your top 10 James Cameron movies or something like that.
Not quite. We're not at that point.
I don't want to do pop culture anymore, guess. After we get...
I feel like we should do, like, we should aim for at least one pop culture during the offseason.
Yeah, well... Fun. Yeah, as long as maybe we plan it before. Look at the completely male-dominated list.
Yeah.
Nonetheless. Yeah. Well, the only real thing of note that's happened, you know, last few weeks is since the Jaguars, of course, closed their offseason program, they're going to be starting training camp. What is it? July 19th, I believe, is when rookies report, and July 23rd is when veterans report. So,
yeah, the 23rd, 24th.
Yeah, you'll start getting content coverage a few days after Veterans Report. That's when practices will actually start. The first few days of training camp are fairly useless until they get in the pads, and then things start amping up a little bit. But other than that, and Trevor Lawrence signing his deal, which we talked ad nauseum, you know, last week about, not as much going on. Trevor Lawrence will talk today about his contract. It'll just be Trevor at the press conference, a lot like Josh Allen after he signed his deal. I mean, it's not earth-shattering or anything, but first chance to talk to Trevor Lawrence since signing his deal. Tony Khan obviously talked about it this week on the Locked On NFL Draft podcast. He said some other interesting things. I'll have transcribed and stuff on Jaguars on SI. Always interesting to hear Tony talk Jaguars and listen to it yesterday. He has said it before, but you know, they didn't have like analytics until the Khans like bought the family. So it's interesting to see, you know, as bad as the Jaguars have been, you know, in the past however many years, how bad they could have been. But other than that, all right, Gus, Jaguars are named one of the teams under the most pressure, I believe, by Pro Football Focus in 2024. I'm going to ask you two questions. One, do you agree or disagree with that? And then two, which players do you think specifically are under the most pressure to perform in 2024?
I think that's probably fair to say. I mean, I feel like national media kind of views like the Jags as like kind of just like a middle tier, middle class team, and like we'll see what happens. But then like the Jags, their expectations within the building are certainly very high, and so I think like even like it's fair to put them under a lot of pressure because I think they're putting themselves under a lot of pressure. And then I think the two players that'll be under the most pressure are the two players who signed like the two biggest contracts in franchise history this offseason. I think like everyone kind of knows that Josh Allen had a big breakout year last year, and it's not exactly going to be easy to replicate his single season franchise record of what was it, 18 and a half sacks. He doesn't even have to replicate that performance necessarily, but he at least needs to like continue to play at like a Pro Bowl caliber level, basically. And then same with Trevor. Like, I think obviously the Jaguars were confident enough to sign him to a contract without like there being a long, extensive period of like production. But now that he's signed, like that's definitely the expectation going forward. And so those two players already put like a world of weight of expectations upon themselves. And so I don't think it's anything that's like going to have an effect on them or anything like that. But I would say that like Trevor and Josh need to perform the most, not only because they're the two best players, but because they were paid like it too.
This might be too simplistic because football is obviously not this, you know, black and white, but can the Jaguars afford to be anything worse than 9-8? During this next like course of like Trevor's like contract?
I don't think so. They've
like, it has to be like the worst like they could be, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that feels like the floor at this point. It is pretty fun how they finished 9-8 in two seasons, and it's just like such a opposing feelings at the end of each season.
That's right. You hit the nail on the head. It really seems like from like a national consensus, the Jaguars just kind of shrugged at. You know, it's like I'd say with other teams that it seems like people just kind of tuned out this offseason, like Arizona kind of. Doesn't really seem like anybody cares what's going on in Las Vegas. I know.
Everyone's tuned out over there.
Yeah, I know I don't. So, I mean, like you said, it's funny because the Jaguars had just become like finally media darlings, and they did the same thing back in 2017. Like they go through a cycle where they go from they're only being talked about when they're being like joked about or digged at. And then they finally play well and people start to take notice, and then people have expectations the next season. And then they more or less, you know, pee down their leg the following season and people stop caring. So I mean, it just shows to get people to care, you have to actually consistently win. You know, that's why people consistently care about like the Baltimore Ravens. That's why people consistently care about the Kansas City Chiefs, the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, I mean, the New England Patriots, you know, during the Tom Brady Belichick era, they were always the most talked about team. They weren't the sexiest team, but I mean, you win, people are going to be invested. So it's kind of shows you like what the media perspective is on this Jaguars team specifically. I do think they're under pressure to perform. Like, I think the Trevor Lawrence contract obviously kind of puts the whole team like some pressure on them, not just Lawrence, but Lawrence obviously is under a lot of pressure now that he's, you know, one of the highest paid quarterbacks. He's only 24, 25 years old thing is going to start becoming a bit, you know, sooner than later. And I did a podcast on the Purple Insider podcast with Matt Kohler this week. And he was like, yeah, once you get to like the fifth or sixth year saying it's everything around him, it's probably not. So
yeah,
not to say that they're in that mode, but it is at the point where I think, okay, he's a fourth year pro now, third year in the system, probably time for some consistency overall as a franchise. So I do think that contract definitely puts the team under pressure to an extent. I'm curious how much pressure like the leaders of the team are on, though. I don't know, man. Bearing like them picking like top three overall, I can't see Trent Baalke being fired. He has basically like done a lot of long-term type moves, like moves I think a general manager makes if he's expected to be around a while. And I mean, let's just be like, you don't get personally like you know, tip of the cap by the owner in a statement after the quarterback signs the biggest deal in franchise history for the owner not to, you know, be a fan. Like he more or less saved Shad Khan a ton of money, you know, moving forward. So Shad Khan's obviously a Trent Baalke fan right now. So I don't think the front office is under any pressure. You think Doug's under pressure? You think a sub 500 season, you think some heat would be on Doug?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is like one thing that national people can kind of get a grasp on too, just because they see Baalke's experience in San Francisco and the way that his tenure kind of ended in a power struggle with John Harbaugh, but he was still able, or Jim Harbaugh. I know. I corrected myself before you could get me. But he outlasted Harbaugh. And so I think everyone's expectation is that like, if there were, not even if there was a power struggle, but if there was just some differences and kind of like someone had to go, then chances are that Baalke will be able to stick around. And so he's been around in Jacksonville already longer than Peterson. And I think that Peterson, like, yeah, I think you could probably point to Lawrence and the offense's production and say like, hey, you won a Super Bowl as an offensive coach and you just like haven't brought enough of that here. Like, I think it might be a little bit different if like Lawrence somehow finished like top eight in touchdowns and they were like somehow still like picking top three, then maybe like there's a way where Baalke is the one that's out. But yeah, I just don't really think that's realistic.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
The one like organizational figure that's on the hot seat the most for sure.
Yeah, it definitely seems like Trent Baalke has some sense of security. I mean, he's even, you know, the ranks have been closed this offseason. He's added a lot of guys who, you know, are fairly, you know, close to him in the front office over, you know, the last couple of years. Like,
yeah,
really, I think we talked about this offseason after Tom Campbell came back, but it's like the most like Trent Baalke front office it's been, you know, during this tenure. And that is one thing about being a general manager. It can very much so be politics. I just, the one thing I can never get out of my head is whenever a team is struggling, the coach is on the field calling the game. The owner is in the box with the general manager. The general manager can be like, no, this is, you know, not saying that's in this case. I'm just saying for like every NFL team.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of like front office stuff is politics. And I mean, Baalke, you know, to his credit, you know, look back San Francisco. Yeah, you're two coaches after Harbaugh. And I mean, he survived the Urban Meyer debacle. So it's pretty, I mean, Bill O'Brien got an interview, so it's pretty clear that, yeah, he knows how to play a game. I agree with you. I think Doug's definitely under pressure for the team and the offense specifically to, you know, perform and probably get over a hump. So I agree with you. Some other players I think are under pressure. Ah, man, that's a tough one. I'd say
Tyson Campbell is the first.
Because
I don't know if, like, necessarily – everyone outside of city limits are placing a lot of expectations on him. Like, the expectation is probably like, oh, this guy has flashed before, so maybe he can like put it all together and like make a Pro Bowl this year or something like that. But I think for the Jags, like, their cornerback room is Tyson and then an older veteran in Ronald Darby, who's like more of a steady presence, but probably won't deliver as many like highlight plays even as Darius Williams did last year. And then kind of just like a rotation of young guys on rookie contracts, basically. And so I think the Jags are really expecting Campbell to be like not just one of their two starting cornerbacks, but a number one cornerback that's able to take away a larger portion of the field than anyone else. And I think that's like a big way that they built their cornerback room. Like, we've talked about the edge depth and how like there's not really a lot of bodies there, but I part of the reason that they don't have a lot of depth is because they're so confident in their top one or two guys. And so I think it's kind of the same with the cornerback room, where like even if the depth might not be amazing, like I think part of the reason that they haven't overly invested in it, or like felt like they didn't have to take a cornerback in the first round in April, is because they're so confident in Tyson Campbell being, again, not just a startable cornerback, but like a cornerback one who can take away opposing number one options. So I think in Jacksonville, in the building, there's a lot of expectations on Tyson.
I think that's fair. I think, you know, you talk about players eligible for extension, and it definitely seems like Tyson's like the front runner over guys like Travis Etienne and Andre Siska. So definitely, you know, seemed like the franchise has big aspirations for him. And when healthy, he's played well. You know, that's an objective fact. You know, other than the like month that he randomly played slot corner for Joe Coleman and Urban Meyer, you know, when healthy, he's been a good football player. His struggles have been when he's not healthy. And like a third, I'd say, of his career so far has been, you know, he's not been healthy. So that's the biggest thing with him. I think Trayvon under more pressure than Josh. Like, yeah, Josh to an extent has to prove that it wasn't like a contract year thing, but mm-hmm. I think Josh has done enough to establish himself as like a dude in the NFL.
Yeah.
Trayvon's biggest fans are undoubtedly in Jacksonville, you know? So I think, you know, for him to start to win over, and, you know, I say all the time, these conversations don't matter, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many people are saying they should have taken Aiden Hutchinson. That impacts nothing. You know, you've already made the move, you know, now it's just time to see how it plays out. But for the scales to at least balance a little bit, I think he's under, you know, some pressure. I think he ranked like top 25 in pressures last year, but he wasn't even top 50 in pass rush win rate. You know, played a lot of snaps, had a lot of pass rush snaps. Obviously, it didn't rotate guys very often. I think for him, pressure to become more of that kind of game wrecker like Josh Allen is, you know, where you're getting not just sacks, but consistent pressure. And I feel like that's the thing that they've missed from Walker in his first 2 years as he's developed. And it takes guys 3 years sometimes. I believe Rashawn Gary, you know, took him mm-hmm. about the same time. He was my comp for Trayvon coming out. But I definitely do think there's pressure on Trayvon to be more of like an impact player on an every down basis, as opposed to, you know, like the sack, you know, in a game is nice, but it's like coming out like a random spot, you know, in the middle of the game, and then anything else. Like, and I will say he's shown flashes. Like, that last drive, him and Josh Allen against the Houston Texans in week 12, like on one of those Josh Allen sacks, like Trayvon just completely, you know, was a bomb detonated like in the interior defensive line. So he's definitely shown flashes of being that guy, but I do think there's some pressure for him to be, you know, that guy consistently.
Yeah, I think you can say make a very similar argument for Devin Lloyd too, because he wasn't the first overall pick, but he still was a first round pick, and kind of the same deal where like he's shown flashes, like, even the first month of his rookie season, he was always kind of in the right place at the right time and made a lot of plays on the ball. And then, like, again, he's shown flashes and done, like, the Trayvon thing where he'll have, like, a super impressive run fit, or he'll have, like, a really nice deflection that I ever had to reach for. But, like, these nice moments come, like, out in, like, a random second quarter. So it'd be nice to, like, just see it put together on a more consistent basis, especially, like, next to – Mr. Consistency in Foye Oluokun. So if they can like actually be like a great duo together, rather than Foye kind of lifting up Devin a little bit, and then same with Josh Allen lifting up Trayvon a little bit, if they can actually be pretty like dynamic and fearsome duos, that'd be pretty good.
The one thing I will say for both those guys is like, it's not like either pick has been dead on arrival, you know, where it's just like brutal. Like, neither pick's been like a Taven Bryan pick or CJ Henderson or Caleb Von Chason, where after probably the first month, you're like, that's something. Yeah. But they've at least flashed. I think consistency is the big thing with both of them. And I agree with you. I do think there is some pressure on each of them, you know, especially, I mean, you're talking contracts. Each guy's going to be 3 years in the NFL. Like, I'd assume they'd pick up the first round option on both of them. But I mean, after 3 years, you can start talking money. And wouldn't surprise me at all to see the Jaguars want to sign one of those guys early, you know, maybe even Trayvon while you're in, you know, the cheap years of the Trevor Lawrence deal. Gus, we're going to take a quick break for an ad, then we'll be right back to talk about more Jaguars offseason. I'm counting the days down to training camp, buddy. All right, we'll be right back. Hello, and welcome back to the Jaguars on SI podcast. John Chipley, my friend, co-host Gus Loeb. Gus, how was your break? The one we just
took. That 10 seconds?
Yeah. I was able to.
Peaceful, I guess. It's a quiet house still, a quiet morning.
I know she didn't say thank you.
For you calling me your friend?
No, for giving you a 10-second break.
Oh, I don't know.
Let me take the foot off the content gas for a little bit. Some manners is all. Some manners is all I'm asking for.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thanks for that moment of serenity.
Well, my grind doesn't stop. Don't know about you. On that note.
You're so wrong for that.
My grind frequently stops. When my grind gets started, that's the more notable moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next question I got for you guys. Next topic. I got asked this in the mailbag. Basically, what the hell happens if Ryan Nielsen really is all that and the Jaguars defense becomes really good under him? Which I think is a distinct possibility. You've thrown a lot of resources at it. You have one at least blue chip player in Josh Allen and the potential for there to be more. But I guess the question is more so framed in, is this guy going to be a head coach like after 1 year if they're really good? And judging on how it seems like the relationships are on the defensive staff, I'd guess like half that staff would probably be gone if Ryan Nielsen.
Yeah, so he's not easily have a bunch of in-house replacements.
Including Chris Ricard, I would say.
Yeah, that would be the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, and you'd think he'd be the favorite to replace Ryan Nielsen, but also the favorite to follow him. So,
right.
I mean, obviously the Jaguars need the defense to be improved this season, but is it – what happens basically if that defense becomes that good? Like, do you think they run risk of losing Nielsen and having to start all over again, like third scheme in 3 years?
I guess, but like, isn't that a risk you're worth taking? Like, oh no, the defense is too good. Like,
yeah,
I made the case on a podcast or three ago that like, I don't think Nielsen will be a head coach next year. I definitely think he's got the goods to be a head coach like in the next 3 years, probably. But like next year, it's more so just about the market where like I think people are going to take Ben Johnson and Mike Vrabel and even Bill Belichick over like a guy with a 1 year stint in Jacksonville and a 1 year stint in Atlanta, even if the product is really good. But I feel like the other argument for like, oh no, like the defense is amazing, like it would definitely be a shame to lose a great defensive coordinator in Nielsen. But then hypothetically, if the defense is performing really well, it's because it has a lot of good players on it. And so I feel like it wouldn't be that difficult of a job to fill. Like, it's not like Doug Peterson is going to have to be like scouring the ranks of college football just to find like a decent replacement. Like, I think there will be a decent amount of people that would like even line up for the Jags DC job if it flashes enough next year.
Does it feel like to you that that's what this is? Like, it's kind of a get in here and overhaul this thing and fix it immediately, and whatever happens from there happens from there. Does it feel to you like a long-term kind of thing? Like just your vibes, basically, based on complete vibes?
That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. The vibes question.
Yeah, because like I don't know personally. Like I assume that Nielsen wants to be a head coach, but like I know for sure that Press Taylor wants to be a head coach. And like, so I just don't know like his own motive, which makes it a good question because I don't actually know the answer. So just based off vibes, I think like it's almost like a 2 year plan where it's like your job is like defense coordinator and like come fix the defense and like you're totally in charge. And then if like you're king of the castle and extremely good at it, then you're gonna like work your way into head coach opportunities, which will still probably be good for the Jags. Because even though, again, it would be a bummer to lose him, if you're losing Nielsen, that means he did a really good job. So, like, I guess I feel like you have to kind of, like, take the good with the bad in that circumstance. And so I think their focus is, like, we're working to win the Jags a Super Bowl. And then if something else comes out of that, then we'll talk about it when it happens. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. Here's my next question. What happens first? Ryan Nielsen takes a head coaching job or Press Taylor takes a head coach interview?
Oh.
That's not saying it as a bit. Like, I'm genuinely interested.
Yeah, in no.
You've made it a bit now.
It was a well-phrased question. I I go with the Ryan Nielsen head coach because I feel more confident in that happening at some point in time. Again, I don't really know when it'll happen, and I don't think it'll necessarily happen in this next year. But like, if Press Taylor never got an interview, I don't know if I'd be surprised.
I'll say this: 7 coaches hired last year. I think 5 of them were defensive coaches.
Hmm.
Is the bit over of only hiring offensive guys?
I mean, yeah, I think so. And if you're going to hire an offensive guy, like, you do it from the Shanahan or McVay tree. Even like Eric Bieniemy, like, it's not like the Andy Reid tree in general isn't getting a lot of hires. Yeah. Is Matt Nagy still the Chiefs offensive coordinator?
I think so, yeah.
So I feel like they just haven't really done a lot of movement. And then like, what's his name? Frank Reich last year was like a one and done coach. So the Andy Reid tree is kind of stalemating a little bit. And so I think, yeah, if someone is going to hire an offensive coach, they're going to look elsewhere.
That makes sense. I hope Ben Johnson's burdened somebody again. The reaction to him turning down the Washington job and then everything Washington has done since, I'm like, it's probably a good call.
Yeah, true. Man. I hope Jaden Daniels works out, but I wasn't super confident that he was going to before the draft, and now in like his landing spot.
Yeah. Be interesting to see play out, my friend. All right. Next topic of discussion. On Jaguar safety, Andre Sisco went on NFL Sirius XM this week. Talked about a couple things. Talked about, obviously, the Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence extensions, but also talked about the AFC South, and he said, the biggest difference I see is the quality of receivers in the division. I think the receivers have taken a huge jump from what the past 2 years have been in the division. Obviously, Ridley going to Tennessee. I know the Colts drafted a kid from Texas. The Texans were really good at receiver, but then they add Stephon Diggs. He said the quality of receiver has taken a step forward. I think quarterbacks in the NFL, you're not really going to play too many duds. So for me, it's kind of a regular day in the office in regards to who we're playing. But the receivers could definitely make a big difference. I think he has a point there about the quarterbacks to an extent, because other than like if you're playing like an injury riddled team or a team in transition or even maybe a team with a young quarterback, like most dudes can play. You know, like there's few quarterbacks on the roster on like the schedule here, like, oh, this dude sucks. Like you're probably gonna go a couple weeks of playing like some dudes.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what's your take on what Mr. Sisco thinks the biggest difference in the AFC South this year is? I still think quarterbacks are going to be the biggest factor in the AFC South. I mean, just between – I think you have 2 question marks in Anthony Richardson and Will Levis that will determine how well those teams do. I know a lot of people in on the Colts after they almost went to the playoffs with Gardner Minshew, but – and I'm an Anthony Richardson fan, but I want to see him stay healthy. So, like, for me, I'm still kind of a question mark on the Colts. And then, obviously, Will Levis – who knows what the hell is going to go on there. So what's your take? That's mine.
Yeah, I think it's more so like it's almost like a quarterback take being posed as like a receiver take because like, yeah, I think the biggest difference is like the receiver rooms in general, but it's because of like the quarterbacks who have arrived and like every team in the division like feels that they have a quarterback worth building around or like even in the Titans case, like worth building around to this extent of like, let's see what he has. And then like, I like their strategy because I feel like worst case scenario, if Will Levis doesn't work out, then like you shed him for like nothing. It doesn't really cost that much. Yeah. And then you can just draft a new guy and plug him into the same great environment. And so it's like when the Jags had Gardner Minshew, like if they were deciding like for resource allocation, whether to take a linebacker or a receiver, like a linebacker might have had just as big of an impact on their team because like Gardner is not going to take like full or like fully maximize like a receiver's downfield ability or just really ability in general, probably. But now that every team in the division has a quarterback that they think might be their guy, like they're going to want to prioritize receivers and prioritize like just helping out their, not just their guy, but their young guy too. Cause that's important to really make their development as smooth as possible. It's cause like, it would be another thing if like when the Colts signed Phillip Rivers and Matt Ryan, like those guys are like pros and veterans and like they can kind of get by without amazing receiver talent. But again, because every team in the division has a quarterback that they're trying to bet on, they're betting on them by investing around them in wide receivers.
That's actually a very poignant, sophisticated and layered take, Gus. I'm almost surprised. I know it's not why you invite me here. Yeah, that was a good one. I agree with you. How would you rank the pass catching, I guess, groups of the four then after all these additions? I'm still going Colts at four. I don't know. I'm not moved by Michael Pittman.
Yeah, Texans are definitely one.
Yeah. Texans are one. Yeah, I'll give you Texans. Colts, I think, are at four. Like, Michael Pittman's good, but
nothing special. Yeah.
He's the Michael Pittman of receivers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Colts at four is fair. Yeah, I'm trying – like, who do you take between D-Hop, Ridley, and
– Tyler Boyd and
Tyler Chigga. Boyd. Yeah, and Chiggy, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
I don't get that reference.
You don't? It's just like a it's like a super old movie about like a flying car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen that movie.
That's about it. But
it's called Herbie Fully Loaded. It sucks. Check my letterbox in my review. Good.
Oh man, I'm struggling. I don't know. I think long term I would rather have the Jags receiver room because like Kirk and Engram are like, I think Engram is 29, Kirk is 27, Gabe Davis is probably like 26 or 27. So all those guys have a few years left, and then you've got Brian Thomas in the wings for the long, long term. But the Titans obviously kind of have some aging stars between DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley. So that's my answer. For this season alone, I'll take the Titans.
I agree.
The receivers. But then for the future, I'll take the Jags. If we're talking about like offense in general, though, including offensive line, definitely the Jags
before the Titans. Wait, I see it. Titans had the better receiver one and receiver two, and Jags had the better receiver three and tight end.
Yeah.
That fair to say?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We have one more segment coming up. We're going to take our final break, and we'll be right back for a couple more minutes on the Jaguars on SI podcast. Hello and welcome back to the Jaguars on SI podcast. John Shipley, my friend, co-host, Goblin, Gus Logue. Yeah, there you go. I'm going to come up with a new term for you each episode. That's going to be a new bit of mine, actually.
Yeah, we're off to a hot start with Goblin. I'm excited to see what you come up with next week.
Well, I like Tyler, the Creator. All right. So ESPN and Seth Walter did offseason grades for all teams now that the hay is more or less in the barn. The Jaguars got a C+, and that was tied with Arizona Cardinals, New York Giants, and Washington Commanders. And like C+ obviously isn't failing, but in terms of his grades, the only teams that was better than was the Detroit Lions at a C, the Atlanta Falcons at a C-, the Minnesota Vikings at a C-, the Dallas Cowboys at a D+, the Las Vegas Raiders at a D, and the New Orleans Saints at a D. So one way we'll look at it, the Jaguars were tied for the 7th worst grade. So obviously just one man's opinion, but he's basically his case was, you know, he didn't mind the Trevor Lawrence, you know, contract really. He did kind of question the defensive firings when the defense was better than the offense, which, yeah, well, the defense had issues. I'd agree the defense did, you know, punch at its, you know, weight class more. He weirdly questioned the Josh Allen signing, said he would have let him play on the franchise tag. I think he might be the only person in the universe. I legitimately haven't seen anybody else ever have that take. So that's not going to fault him for it, but it's a new one.
He
plotted the Jaguars for, you know, a few other moves, you know, resigning some veterans, Eric Armstead, Ezra Cleveland, etc. For the biggest move, he said extending Trevor Lawrence. That's obvious. Biggest contract in franchise history. The move he liked, trading down and drafting Brian Thomas Jr. I'd agree with that. I'd say that's probably, like, if you're just looking at it from a pure, you know, team-building process type of move, that's, like, maybe that's not the most impactful move they made, but, like, from process – yeah. That's definitely like the biggest win, you know, they had. You know, like getting those two top 100 picks in next year's draft. Would you agree with that?
For sure. And then I feel like even the Ridley process was like, I mean, maybe you can call it a bad process, but you can also call it like an understandable process from the Jags end. Like they kind of like knew all the risks that they were taking by letting Ridley reach free agency. And then obviously they were pretty stunned, but they were able to come up with a decent backup plan by drafting Brian Thomas.
I'm not going to let you start applying the draft picks in the Brian Thomas trade to letting Ridley go. I'm not gonna, I can already see it. Like, oh yeah, we lost Ridley, but we got a third and a fourth in Brian Thomas for it. No, they're separate.
Yeah, separate. The Jags were like disappointed to lose Ridley, but I don't know. I feel like they're getting faulted for it a little bit more than they should. Yeah. Maybe that's a wrong take.
No, I think now that you look back at it a few months later, it definitely looks better than it did in the exact moment when people like me killed them. But I don't have any regret. It's time to look bad. Yeah, things change. All right. I think that's definitely like probably the best move process-wise. I still think Eric Armstead. I know it's a little pricey for a guy with his age and injury history, but I think he's probably going to be the most impactful like actual move for 2024 season.
I agree. My sneaky pick would be Gabe Davis because, like, I don't think he's, like, necessarily going to – like, but at the end of his contract, we're going to look back and say, like, oh, he 100% lived up 100% to the money he signed for. But I do think that, like, the Jaguars' process in terms of, like, how to fix the offense is pretty sound. And it was just what I was talking about in the last week of, like, essentially adding spacing to the offense with speed threats – in order to just like open up the intermediate passing game, the short passing game, the entire running game, et cetera. And so I think the process was sound in trying to do that. And so I feel like Gabe Davis, like, I don't think he's going to be more productive or even more effective than like Armstead, but that would be like my sleeper choice. Cause I think it could end up turning out pretty well. And again, it was just good process.
That's a fair take. The move Walder disliked the most was losing Darius Williams, and he said the team got value in signing Mitch Morse and re-signing Ezra Cleveland, but lost Williams, who is coming off a strong season in which he allowed a better than average 1.0 yards per coverage snap to the Rams in free agency. Losing is a weird word. Like, they like actively got rid of him.
Yeah, right. It seemed like another good process, almost similar to like Gabe Davis, and just the fact that I think they understand what they need to do to quote unquote fix their scheme. So for the defensive side of the ball, it was like Darius is a great player and had a great season last year, but he's very much like a off ball zone cornerback using his eyes. And the Jags under Nielsen for their cornerbacks are looking for big and physical and man coverage. And so like I think the process was pretty sound in terms of letting him go and then getting Ronald Darby as a direct replacement.
Yeah, I don't know. The narrative around the Darius Williams release has been so weird. It first got painted as, oh, they lost Darius Williams for cap-related reasons. This is what happens when you spend in free agency, et cetera. And now you see them with almost $40 million in cap space. They could have easily kept Darius Williams. Easily. They didn't lose Darius Williams. They actively released him.
That's the move I was thinking about earlier when we were talking about Baalke and like how he feels like he has future security based on the moves.
Yeah.
Like he wouldn't have like that's not a move you make unless like you're building the roster for years to come.
And then I was gonna say Williams is around the age where cornerbacks it feels like they can decline it in a year, but his replacement for Williams, I believe, is the same exact age. So I can't really make that argument, and neither can they, for the record. So overall, he gave them a C+. Guts, I guess I just completely skipped over worst move. What do you think is the worst move that they made this offseason?
I don't know. Like, I was going to say
– they didn't make many mind-numbing ones.
I was going to say losing Ridley, but at the same time, like, letting him walk probably would be better than having have to pay him, like, $24 million a year. Like, then that would have almost been, like, the biggest, like, mistake or whatever of the offseason. So,
I got one for you.
Trading for Mac Jones.
Trading for Mac Jones. You know, I was actually going to say that as a bit, or at least considered it, but I know you mean it. So, okay. I got one for you.
Okay.
Not adding a running back.
A running back?
I know DeAndre Johnson, but you know what I mean. Huh?
They got Keelan Robinson.
You know what I mean. Not adding some competition for Tank Bigsby.
Mm. Yeah. Isn't Dearness still on the team?
He's not competition for Tank
Bigsby. Yeah, no, that's fair to say.
Yeah.
I was thinking earlier, like, that's fair, because I was thinking when we were doing the expectation segment, like, Travis Etienne has a lot of expectations because, like, he's going to have to continue carrying the load all by himself until we see something otherwise.
Yeah, so, and I don't know. It's a big bet, potentially impactful bet. Gus, overall grade, what are you giving them?
I was thinking B minus. So I don't think that C plus is all that unfair. I think I wanted to give them like a slightly above average grade because, again, like on both sides of the ball, I think the process makes sense. Like, obviously, you didn't want to lose Ridley, but like I kind of understood what they were doing the whole time between like not wanting to give up a second round pick and then not wanting to pay him $24 million plus dollars a year. But like, I think, I don't know if, Water in the ESPN article even mentioned like locking up Trevor Lawrence and Josh Allen, because even though those are like two things that like should have always happened and should have always been the case, like the team absolutely still deserves credit for getting it done. And then even like with Mitch Morrison, Eric Armstead, like maybe they'll have like an early injury, knock on wood, and like really not make the impact at all that the team was hoping, because I think the team really expect both of them on each side of the ball to like not just improve their specific position that they're like replacing someone with, but also like all the people around them.
Yeah.
And so like everything like makes sense to me, but we'll just see if it works out.
That's fair. I'd say, I don't know, when I'm struggling to come up with what I think is the worst move, you probably didn't have a bad offseason. Yeah. Like, they didn't have any completely mind numbing moves. I think, I know a lot of people were surprised.
It was just like nitpicking over like, the day three picks, which is like,
a lot of people were surprised about the Mason Smith pick. I think you probably see some people submit that as for what they think their worst move is. So I'd go B minus as well. I get C plus because I think at the same time, they didn't like locking up Allen and Lawrence, I think was very important. I'm not going to give credit for Allen that much because it should have happened a while ago. I'll give semi-credit for Lawrence for choosing to do it now instead of waiting a year. Only semi-credit because also, how much credit do you need for signing Trevor Lawrence? Not like I said, though, not a lot of mind-numbing moves. I'd say B-minus is fair. I also get C-plus, though, because other than making important moves, they didn't swing for many home runs. Like, I guess Eric Armstead like was their biggest swing, but would you consider that like a home run type swing, like in terms of, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying. You get my narrative based question.
Swing is like the Titans like trading for LeJarius Sneed and then handing him a massive contract. Like,
yeah.
Do anything like exactly. That. I honestly think like we all got Balky ball this offseason. I think Balky had like a pretty good offseason in terms of like doing what he needed to do, because like when I think about it, if the offense quote unquote fails this season and everyone is fully healthy, like I kind of feel like they have all the pieces that they need. And so if it fails, then I'll point my finger at coaching. And then same for the defense. Like I think like maybe their depth is not quite at like contender level, but at the same time, I think they have enough pieces to make it work. And so if the defense fails, then I'm going to point more so to coaching. And so I think Balky has set up himself very well, but also just the team.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. All right, I got one last quick rapid-fire question because I got to get the hell out of here. Actually, go to work at the Miller Electric Center.
MEC.
Yep. All right, so which offseason will age better in your opinion, 2022 or 2024? You got like 5 seconds to answer this. Don't think about it. Don't give me an explanation. Just pick
2024 because it was the year that Trevor signed an extension. And Josh Allen. So, like, and, like, I don't know, Brian Thomas. Like, between those three.
And I guess, like, the 2022 offseason, like, Kirk and Ingram and Fourier are, like, three, like, building blocks. But other than that, how much of that class is really still around?
The most notable things from 2022 were, like, free agent additions, which is, like, yeah, like, they deserved credit, but at the same time, like, a big reason they got those additions is just by spending more money than other teams were willing to spend. And so I think, like, they actually, in terms of, like, the process and work done, I think, like, well, I guess we'll see what happens in terms of what we look back on, but for right now, I definitely think that like 2024 was the most impressive offseason they've had in a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's fair. All right, I know I said last question. This is really the last question.
Okay.
It's probably the most important question I've asked you in a while. And I want you to shoot straight down the line, no BS, all right? Can you promise me that?
Yeah, I promise.
Does this hat make my eyebrows look bushy? It does, doesn't it? Go to hell.
I wasn't thinking it before. It's like that kind of thing where like you only notice if like you point it out to someone. But I was looking at you the whole podcast and I didn't think it until you said it.
I'm burning this hat.
Right. It's a cool hat. I like the hat.
It was. Yeah. All right. We're in it. Thank you guys for joining the Jaguars on SI podcast. John Shipley, my friend, co-host, Goblin of the Week, Gus Lug. We'll see what I call him next week. Thank you guys for joining us. Please remember to subscribe to us on YouTube at Jaguars on SI podcast. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Enter questions for our mailbag. You can find a link to that at the end of every article. Something I probably should have done for the last 5 years. Gus, you got anything else to add?
No, let's get out of here. Let's go talk to Trevor.
Good call. Good call. Thank you guys again for 106, and we'll be back next week. Don't forget, you got Balky Ball.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.